right. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Screen Heroes. This is episode 119. I am Derek, one of your regular hosts. I have my two other hosts with me, Ryan.
Hello.
And Ray.
Hi.
And we're going to be talking some movie TV news before we move on to our main topic, which is a brand new segment that we have been working on called Let's Rewrite It.
Yes.
We're going to be kicking things off with the DCEU and Man of Steel, the first movie in the DCEU, on essentially its fifth year anniversary of it being released in theaters. So we'll be rewriting Man of Steel, and then we'll move on to the other DCEU movies over the course of the next few months. Before we move on to that, let's talk news, guys. What has been going on?
A lot of little stuff.
Okay. Anything in particular that you'd like to share with the rest of the class?
All right. So Ocean's 8 came out this weekend. We went to go see it. We thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a fun movie. At the box office, it made more money than any other Ocean's movie. That is not adjusted for inflation, though. So people should not, you know, be too in your face.
But it had the largest opening weekend of an Ocean's film.
Okay. It did.
That's cool. It was a good movie. I liked it a lot.
I didn't see it, I haven't even seen a trailer for it, to be honest with you. The Ocean's movies never really appealed to me, so...
I've only seen the Ocean's 11 remake, and then I saw Ocean's 8 this past weekend. I really liked the Ocean's 11 remake. I thought that was really good, and I like how this one ties into it. But it was a lot of fun. I thought it was really well done.
Good.
No opinion?
I'm glad you like it. No, I said I liked it.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. All right. Next news article, then.
Jeez.
There's some stuff that happened with Geoff Johns, Derek. You might want to talk about that, because sure. You seem to have an attachment to the whole thing, so...
Well, I am a big Geoff Johns fan. Geoff Johns more or less saved the Green Lantern franchise from cancellation and extinction in the comic book realm, and he's the one who created the full emotional spectrum, and he wrote Blackest Night and Brightest Day and that type of thing, so... Some of the most important, significant, and loved parts of Green Lantern lore are his. And he's been the chief creative officer of DC for a while now. Not like a super long time, a couple of years, I think. And he is stepping down from that role. Jim Lee, who is an incredible artist and creative mind and publisher, will be taking over that role. And Jeff will be moving on to start his own production company, which will be probably working with DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers quite a bit. He's also writing and will be producing the Green Lantern Corps movie, which we now know will include Hal Jordan and Jon Stewart, which will be an interesting combination of guys. So I'm looking forward to that, because if anybody knows how to write Green Lantern, it's Geoff Johns.
And if anybody knows how to destroy something good, it's WB. So,
so maybe we'll get something mediocre then, if they can just level each other out.
Right.
But I think that DC Comics is left in great hands with Jim Lee. He's an incredible talent, and I think Geoff Johns will work well to help build the DCEU in the right direction. He did help write Aquaman. He has a writing credit on Aquaman, and early reactions have been very positive. Some people got to see the trailer this past weekend. We're supposed to see it here shortly.
Sometime this week.
So, yeah. And
probably tomorrow, I would think, because it's coming with Jurassic World 2. Is that what it's called?
It's Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Fallen Kingdom.
Yeah, but that's not for another week, though.
Oh, I thought that was this weekend.
So it's out in certain countries, but not here in the United States. I have a buddy of mine who's already seen it in the UK, the movie, that is, not the trailer, and he said it was really, really good. He's a little biased. He's a bit of a kaiju guy, so he likes monster movie type things, and that's what Jurassic stuff basically is. But, yeah.
Well... We're supposed to see it this week, so at some point, and it's supposed to be attached to the new Jurassic World movie, so, you know, hopefully it's tomorrow and not, you know, Sunday evening at 11 p.m.
Yeah, my assumption was maybe they were just waiting for E3 to pass, because that's been taking up a lot of the media resources the last few days, and Nintendo finished up their stuff today, so that's it for, like, the big conferences. You know, everything else is really show floor stuff, so we'll probably get the trailer, like you're saying, probably tomorrow.
That'd be cool.
So, yeah. What else we got?
Rian Johnson's Star Wars trilogy launches 2020.
That official?
Yep.
Okay. It
just dropped.
After The Last Jedi, I'm really not that excited for it, to be honest with you. So,
well, we'll have one. We'll have episode 9 in 2019, so this will be the year after.
Right. I'm just saying that based on that movie, I'm not a super big fan of his take on the Star Wars universe, but I guess we'll see. I would be happy to be wrong.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my hope is that since he gets to focus on other more universe building type stuff, that maybe that will show his strengths rather than being stuck on the Skywalker saga.
And he's not having to resolve a bunch of things that happened in the previous movie.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that could be, and I hope that's the case.
And I assume he had certain road markers they needed to be at by the end of the movie for episode 9. That may not be true, but I'd be surprised if it wasn't.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the Stephen Colbert fan-made trailer?
I did not watch it. I meant to when I got home, but I...
Same. So, Stephen Colbert's pretty pissed about all the toxicity and the harassment that people have been getting, namely Kelly Marie Tran and Daisy Ridley. So he recut a bunch of the new stuff to include just basically all women and minorities, all white people. And it was pretty hilarious. I can appreciate that. You know, it's never fun.
I guess that was news we hadn't talked about, huh? That Kelly Marie Tran just left Instagram altogether.
So maybe we should talk a little bit about that for backstory.
Sure. Okay, so, you know, Daisy Ridley left Instagram after The Force Awakens, and because of harassment, Felicity Jones never left her social media, but she, of course, received it. John Boyega, Oscar Isaac, they've been targets of harassment. And then Kelly Marie Tran has gotten pretty much nonstop harassment since The Last Jedi came out. And finally, she just decided to shut her shit down for a while, which I can't really blame her.
It isn't just the Star Wars fan base.
No, like, it's
Joss
not.
Joss Whedon, famously same after thing. Age of Ultron, same thing. But it does seem like because Star Wars is such a huge property that there's a lot more people that are going to be toxic.
There's also a huge history of it, too. I mean, Jake Lloyd, and I forget the guy's name, but the guy who played Jar Jar Binks were also bullied and harassed. And, you know, you look at Jake Lloyd now, his life has been kind of ruined. So it's not something new for Star Wars, but there's a dark side to every fandom, and I think it's just the type of fanatic. Eventually, somebody safeguards something too much that they become entitled and reject anything new.
Star Wars gets it a lot, I think, just because the original trilogy has been held up as this iconic masterpiece, and whether or not it is or not is not my point. It's just that's the status that it's reached in our culture. So when they try to do it again in the prequels, and now this second time with Disney, people are still so beholden to the originals. Very few franchises have that type of background. Star Trek saw it a lot in the 90s before the internet and social media were really a thing. And they got tons and tons of hate mail when they were going to have the first black lead and the first woman captain in DS9 and Voyager respectively. But now it's just, we all see it. We didn't see it in the 90s when people
wasn't the internet.
Right. Yeah. People wrote letters and hate mail to the actors and to the studios, but we never had to see any of that. Now it's just, it's everywhere. It's in everybody's face all the time. And it's just mind-boggling to me how easily people want to ruin the stuff that they supposedly love. But, you know.
Like, none of us at the table really enjoyed The Last Jedi as a whole. We've talked about that multiple times. We poked fun at things that we didn't like. But the movie, just because we didn't enjoy it, doesn't mean that we're no longer Star Wars fans. And it also doesn't mean that we need to, you know, insult people personally for being.
I would never go to an actor's Instagram or Twitter or something like that and tag them in a bunch of crap talking about how
completely rewrite their Wikipedia to be racist.
Yeah, I mean, I would never even dream of doing that. I'll post something on my personal Facebook that says this movie was not my favorite. Go see it or don't, you know.
That's also the harshest we've all been on social media. We're like, you know, this isn't for me. I'm going to move on.
I mean, I talk about my hatred of Star Trek Into Darkness a lot, and I would never insult the actors you know, as on a personal level, even like, or anybody in the cast and crew, like, you know, Abrams may not be a Star Trek fan. And he's admitted that. That's fine. He's entitled to. It's a personal preference, right? I don't have anything personally against these people, and not liking a movie does not mean the people are bad people. The people have to do something bad for me not to like them.
Right.
You know, and being in Star Wars The Last Jedi does not make you a bad person. It makes you an actor.
That's not bad. That's not good. Like, Kelly Marie Tran's character, a lot of people did not like.
Right. She's very polarizing. Here,
it's got nothing to do with the actress. She didn't write the character. No. All she did was get a paying gig in the Star Wars universe.
And no, who's going to turn that down?
Yeah.
People are begging to be in Star Wars. Yeah. No one's going to turn down an offer.
Right.
She got to go to the Oscars because of it. She got to go to the Tony. Like, she...
And it's sad because before the movie came out, she, if you saw interviews with her, she was smiling ear to ear because of how excited she was to be a part of the franchise. Absolutely. And then people just decided to shit all over that.
It is really tough, and it's frustrating, and it's even more frustrating because it's only women and minorities that get this. When a white dude has a bad movie, everyone's just like, yeah, that movie sucked, and then we move on with our lives.
Yeah, see, Mark Hamill, a lot of people did not like the way Luke went and all those, but he... Everybody still loves him. Yeah.
But even outside of Star Wars, you know, you look at, like, you know, Ryan Reynolds is a good example because he likes to poke fun at himself a lot in Deadpool because of Green Lantern and Wolverine Origins. But nobody was, like, really harassing and insulting and berating him in intense ways on social media after either of those roles. And those were bad movies for him. Let's be honest. Yeah. He admits it. No one's questioning that. You know, it's used as an excuse to attack women. But there's also
minor ways people do it too. Like, we talked a lot about the toxicity and the harassment, which are huge, major character flaws. But there are other arguments that people use to cover this up. And I heard it when I was at my last convention. I just got really sick of it because I heard it like 4 or 5 times. We were talking about Jessica Jones and the second season. This guy was like, you know what? I was really pissed off when they said that every episode was going to be directed by a female. And I was like, do go on. And he's like, I just want the best person for the job. And I'm like, well, that's what everybody wants. That's what they're hiring, you know? But it's a thinly veiled narrative for, I don't want things to change. And that kind of bothers me, because this is exactly what happened with Solo. The guys who directed Lego were fired because they were screwing things up, and they were replaced with Ron Howard, arguably one of the best directors out there. Like, he's won tons of awards. He's a very incredibly talented man. And still nobody went to go see the movie. So clearly you don't want that. You just don't want change. Like,
right.
People have to have their doors open for them, and so many directors are already women. I know, it's so weird, but they don't get the same opportunities, so it's a little difficult. And this one show cast 12 different directors for their episodes, and they're all girls. Like, oh no, it's so terrible. Like,
I mean, there's when I only to the point of all the episodes being women is the point where I'm like, that seems more, it's kind of like the Ghostbusters thing where it seemed like it was more of a gimmick. I'm not saying it was a gimmick. I enjoyed Jessica Jones season 2, but if it was like 11 women and one man, then they just took the best people for the job, sure. But when it's specifically 12 women, it's possible that those were the best of the best. I don't know who they were picking, but when it's literally all 12, that I don't know. I like the second season, so I don't really care that much. But the Ghostbusters one, I mean, that was
a gimmick. That was used as a gimmick. And it was a gimmick that did not pay off. Right. Ocean's 8 just used the exact same gimmick, and it did pay off. High critical praise, high audience numbers.
And they legitimately got really, like...
good actors.
Was not...
It's a great...
No
Oscar winners in there. Like, multiple Oscar winners in there.
Right.
I mean, it's okay to do it on purpose, because it's done on purpose the other way around all the time, right?
Because here's my point. Daredevil season 1 and 2, Iron Fist, Defenders, Luke Cage season 1 and 2, and Punisher, not one female director.
Yeah, there is something to be said for that, for sure.
So,
yeah.
And in Jessica Jones season 1, 2 female directors. I just feel like...
But they directed multiple episodes, I'm pretty sure. There wasn't a different director on every episode
of season one. Okay. It's just the balance is off there.
Yeah. No, you're right. That's so, something I would never notice. Because when it's television, I went back and looked into that.
I didn't pay attention as I'm watching this and keep that information in my head for the past 5 years.
Yeah, I rarely look at who's directing TV episodes. I only ever notice if it shows up in the credits and it's like one of the actors on the show. And I'm like,
hey, Kevin Smith is directing this episode of Arrow. Right. Or something, not Arrow, because they will never let him do that, but Flash or Supergirl.
Yeah, I noticed like that, or something. Or like, LeVar Burton directed this episode of Voyager. That's cool because it's another Star Trek actor. Like that I noticed. But
yeah.
It never even occurred to me that with how the Marvel Netflix shows are, that you would have so many directors, because it's barely like, it's not really episodic. There's just so much of one thing that you'd think you'd want fewer opinions.
Yeah.
Fewer
chefs in the kitchen.
Exactly.
Have one person with the overarching vision do a whole thing.
So I'm actually surprised to hear that they have more than like two or three in a season.
Well, I knew about Jessica Jones season two because there was a lot of articles about that. Yeah. It was on quite a bit on Facebook. But the other, I don't know how many different directors were in Punisher or Daredevil season two or Daredevil season one or any of those. Luke Cage even. I mean, I don't know any of those. So
I usually don't notice when it's TV. So
that's fair.
My own fault,
I mean, to be fair, when you start getting, Daredevil Season 2 or Jessica Jones Season 2, this cast has worked together a lot, so really the director may not really have to do that much. Kevin Smith has come out and said that every time he comes on the set, it's literally a well-oiled machine. He's just there, to be there.
There's a lot of framing that's involved, from a camera perspective.
Oh, sure.
Because the actors know, who their characters are. At this point, Grant Gustin should know who the Flash is, right? But,
the same doors just aren't open.
Oh, yeah.
And that's my point. It shouldn't be newsworthy if a show around a woman is directed by women. Right. It shouldn't be, but it is. It was a big press release and huge articles, and it shouldn't be a big deal. And it is.
Maybe that's the problem. They should just do it and not report on it.
And have press conferences about it. But then they lose out on the publicity.
But that's the problem, right? Because the point is supposed to be that it's equal footing. It's not supposed to be that, hey, look what we did. Because that's not... Then did you
but
do it?
But that's not how businesses work.
I know.
Because businesses... I don't disagree.
But then it just colors all of those decisions. Because then the question is, well, did you do it because you thought you should?
Well, now it's suspect. Or, exactly.
And my issue is that... while we're doing this, we're also being boxed in. Great. Patty Jenkins directed Wonder Woman and Ryan Coogler directed Black Panther. And that's great because they have similar viewpoints of life. But are we ever going to let a woman direct Iron Man? Are we ever going to let a black man direct Batman? Is that going to happen?
I mean, I wouldn't see any reason why not. It seems
exactly.
ridiculous that we're even having
to
talk about that.
Why are we talking about this? Yeah. But it's...
I understand.
It just keeps popping up. So, I don't know. I feel like I personally have a connection to Batman and could direct a Batman movie, and it would
Why
be...
Why not, right? Like, Tim Burton, all his movies, he could have been black when I was a kid, for all I care. I had no idea, It doesn't matter to me. The movie is what... I want them to be represented. I'm not saying that side doesn't matter, but...
Absolutely.
I just want the good movie, and whether it's a man, a woman, a black man, a black woman, whatever, who cares, right? It's ultimately, we want the best movie, and the studio wants the best movie, and the fact there's prejudice is a little...
It's frustrating.
So, yeah.
I just feel like there has to be some overcompensation here and there, and...
Yeah.
Sure. Absolutely. Balance it out.
A little bit.
Not that it balances that out, but...
Yeah. All right. Anything else in the news that we'd like to cover?
The Batman reboot is apparently going to be a reboot and no Ben Affleck.
But the internet really wants to bring back Armie Hammer from the George
Miller.
Well,
the internet one day wants Ben Affleck back. And then the next day, they're like, we want him out. And then third day, they're like, well, we wanted Batman Beyond with Affleck. it's like...
Bring back Wilfred Dell.
Yeah, make up your mind, okay?
I mean, at this point, I'm not going to believe who Batman is until I see a trailer.
Yeah, exactly. And even then, it's suspect after the Justice League trailers. It's like, okay.
How much of this is going to make it into the movie, really?
Who still has a mustache?
Right? Yeah. Right. Well, how many mustaches were edited?
I'm going to sit down in the theater and I'm just like, so who's Batman in this one?
Right.
I don't, at this point, I don't care anymore. I just want a straight answer.
Yeah.
You know, this whole back and forth thing is just so ridiculous. Now there's all these rumors. Did you hear the latest San Diego Comic-Con rumors for DC? These are great.
If this are there any Shazam ones? Because we haven't had a Shazam Gate update.
No, okay. No. The rumor is now the rumor is that the Snyder Cut of Justice League will be announced at SDCC.
Right. No, I'm sure that's going to happen.
Sorry.
This is like Y2K. You guys remember?
It's worse.
You guys remember Y2K? It was supposed to happen on January 1st, 2000, and when nothing happened, a bunch of people were like, no, we mean next year. Right? That's what this has become.
Done.
Except this is worse because this has, like, the Y2K thing was fear of, you know, the entire world shutting down.
That's fair.
Whereas this is like some fanboys not getting a movie that they think is going to be better, but in actuality is probably going to be about the same in terms of quality.
It's hard to have
possibly worse because it wasn't finished.
I was going to say, it's hard to have a cut of a movie that was never done.
Yeah.
Right. Everybody thinks it's just like, they're holding on to it, they're hoarding it, you know, waiting for 5 years from now when they can release the ultimate cut.
See, and that's the thing. So for those who are confused by our sarcasm here, the ultimate cut of BVS was available because they took the final movie and took things out of it and put it into theaters.
Yeah.
So they were able to add those things back in.
And it was only like 12 minutes or something. It was not that much longer.
But Justice League, Snyder never finished it. He was what, like 60% of the way through or something like that? And then Whedon came in and finished it. So do you want 60% of a movie? Like, there's no way that's going to be better, right?
I think they imagine that they're just going to fill in the rest with Whedon bits. But I don't really understand how that's going to be any better.
I want that to be a new cereal. We didn't think.
Yeah. So, that's where we are. All right, well, that's probably enough.
Theme, entitled fans.
I think that's probably enough from news, unless you guys have anything important.
No, now we're going to be entitled fans and rewrite a movie.
Shazam Gate, nothing.
No updates this week.
There is a rumor that Shazam adjacent. That Dwayne Johnson will not be Black Adam in Suicide Squad 2.
Yeah,
thank goodness.
Now, here's what's confusing about how it was phrased.
Does that mean he's going to be somebody else?
That's my concern, is it sounded like either him or Black Adam was going to be in the movie, but not as the same character, not as the same thing.
Maybe he's just Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah, The Rock is so popular that he can infiltrate every cinematic universe as himself and also as other characters.
What I really mean is, it sounded more like maybe he's not going to be Black Adam anymore, that it's taking too long and they're gonna have somebody else be Black Adam.
How are they gonna do it? I mean, there's other villains for Shazam, but why would you not have Black Adam in the Shazam movie, either as a teaser or something like that? Why are you putting him in Suicide Squad 2? Who on that squad is gonna challenge Black Adam?
To be fair, we don't know that he's not in Shazam.
That's fair, but I mean, he's not the main villain.
No, he's not the main villain, but for all we know, he does show up towards the end and something happens and the Suicide Squad stumble upon him. It didn't sound like he was supposed to be like the villain.
What's
for Suicide
a person
Squad?
With a baseball bat going to do against Black Adam?
Nothing.
It didn't sound like he was supposed to be the villain for Suicide Squad. It just sounded like he was going to be in it.
He was going to join the squad? What are you, some kind of Suicide Squad 2?
He said the thing.
He said the thing.
Oh, God. All right, let's move on. So we are. All right, so we are going to move on. Our segment is, as I said, Let's Rewrite It. We're starting with Man of Steel in the DCEU on its 5th anniversary of theatrical release. Our goal here is to pump the movies up, make them better, make them tighter, more interesting, or more coherent.
Going in chronological order, so how they released, but Man of Steel is a good one to start off, because since this is a new segment for us, we're probably going to hit some bumps along the way.
Yeah,
and
I
Man
still
of
don't
Steel,
really understand what I'm supposed to be doing.
Man of Steel just isn't like that bad of a movie. It's actually pretty good, and so there's not much I would want to fix with it.
Yeah, that's something I was struggling with, was that, I mean, if you've watched this show or our previous podcast, I liked Man of Steel a lot.
Yeah.
So changing things was more like, for me, it was more like, what would I think the general would be better for the general audience rather than what I would want, because I wouldn't want to change that much, because I like Zack Snyder, even if he's bad at storytelling a lot of the time. You know, there's things that could have been done a little better for sure. But
I was also thinking about all the things that could come from this, you know, the movies that followed, what could happen, and you know, sure, how this movie affects everything. But honestly, the most disappointing thing is that Man of Steel has a wonderful theme, I guess, in cinematography. Everything about it is just, like, pretty good. And then you get to Justice League, and that tone is lost. That goal is lost. That cinematography, it's just down a toilet. It's just not there anymore.
Well, and Batman v Superman, I mean, there was a lot of changes in the Superman character. Yeah. That, too, and his name is in the title, right? It wasn't a Batman movie. It wasn't a Superman movie.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a movie for both of them.
Yeah.
And there should have been a stark contrast between the two, you know, Batman and Superman.
Agreed. That's why I actually think the tone of Man of Steel does need to change.
Okay, so let's start with just the superficial things. Would you guys change any of the casting?
No. I mean, I thought the cast was fine. I don't think there's anybody that stood out that was out of place or anything like that. I mean, I love Russell Crowe as Jor-El. I think he's great. Henry Cavill's a wonderful Superman.
There's a lot of people out there that are like, he doesn't have the acting chops for it, and I just disagree.
They haven't watched The Tudors. He was incredible on that show, and they haven't seen his other films.
Cause... I mean, I've not seen any of his other films other than like the Mission Impossible trailer that he's in, and I like, you could tell he has more range than what was there in the movie. It was just, sure, he was playing it as they wanted him to play it.
Right.
Clark is very bland until he goes insane in Psycho. Like, yeah. He's just a bland vanilla guy. Sorry.
So the very, very, very first thing I would change, and this is nothing against Hans Zimmer, is the score.
Okay.
So the score sets the tone for the whole movie, in my opinion.
Sure.
And while Hans Zimmer's score is really good, I think it needed to evolve to where it ends up from the original Superman theme. I think not starting with the original Superman theme was a mistake, because if you go back, that was the first true, real, recognizable superhero theme song. That wasn't like the cartoon, Adam West Batman, or a cartoon thing, right? Like the theme.
Yeah, because
like
the Spider-Man
real
theme.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like a real orchestral theme was the Superman theme by John Williams. And while I do not think that needed to stay forever, I think showing it evolve into Hans Zimmer's theme would have been better.
Okay.
I think there would have been a lot of angry people that they're like, you're using this part of the Superman history in movies to try and make this movie better.
No, because it's been done in multiple franchises.
Sure.
Star Wars, Star Trek, Jurassic Park, they've all done it. And the idea is to respect the past, but also move it in a new direction. And this movie doesn't do that. And
right.
It is a reboot, right? And most reboots from older franchises try and do that.
Right. I'm saying that this is a specific character, not a franchise. So it's not like Star Wars or Star Trek or something like, or Jurassic Park. It's Superman, the character. And, you know, a lot of people didn't really read comic books or know him before those movies. And he had however many you want to count as good movies before that.
Two.
Yeah, sure. I think that's a pretty good consensus for most people. So, you know, they have ownership of that character from those movies.
Of course.
And so, when you bring him into the new ones, I don't know. I like his, I have his, the original theme on my Spotify, not the new one, the one from the old movies. And I think it's still to this day easily recognizable and iconic.
I guess what it comes down to is, do you think it would have made the movie better?
I do.
You do, because you...
Because I think it's...
So I'm the tie-breaking voter.
I think it's important to set the tone for who he is. And since this Superman movie does the origin story in a very different but really good way, I think it's important to set who he is in the beginning. And it doesn't have to be big in your face. It can be light. It can be just pieces of it there, like Star Trek 09 did.
Like Justice League did. Or wait, that was a Batman v Superman, the one that used like some of the original Batman themes.
Batman v Superman like did that, yeah. Okay. Like pieces like that where you can, or no, maybe it was Justice
that
League.
That was Justice League.
It was Justice League. Where you can hear it, you can recognize it. It feels familiar. It doesn't have to be literally the theme, but pieces of the theme, the right notes or the right progression or something like that. To show you, like, early on in the movie when he's, like, saving the guys on the oil rig or something like that, right? Instead of having the intense, droning Hans Zimmer music, which is really great. I have the soundtrack. I love his work. Having pieces of the original Superman theme in there to show this is the guy right? He's not just, you know, because we're not calling the movie Superman. He's never called Superman in the movie. So having these little pieces to show, but he is, I think would have helped ground the character in the history.
I'm not going to be as lengthy as Derek. I just disagree. I don't think that it would have made any difference for the majority of the movie going public. I think it would have angered some of them that had that ownership of the character. And like, this movie was not received very well, so using that theme from something that they love so much and something that they may not like, you know.
I mean, maybe.
It's tough, because this is all hypothetical.
It is. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were a lot of people, myself included, who were disappointed that the theme didn't show anywhere in the movie. I felt like the movie tried too hard to not be Superman. Right? Like, Superman is a pretty iconic character. He's the most recognizable fictional character in the world. And people have an idea of who he is. And the Superman we see in Man of Steel tries to be different. Right? And I think maybe that's why people didn't like it.
Okay. Ryan, how about you?
For what?
First thing you would change.
I would cut down on the amount of plot elements that are in the movie. Okay, I would get rid of Krypton, first thing. Don't need any of that. It was one of my favorite parts of the movie, but it added like 20 minutes that really didn't pay off throughout the movie. Like, there wasn't really a lot of significance to that. Everybody knows who Superman is, right? There's not a person that's going to this movie, or probably, you know, there's probably people in the United States, but not a lot of the movie going public doesn't know who Superman is, doesn't know his history or anything. I don't think that the movie was like, what, 2 hours and 24 minutes?
It's a long
movie. It was a long movie. Yeah. And there were parts that felt like they drug on, and a lot of that Krypton stuff, while beautiful, was not really that exciting. How many times can you sit there listening to Zod scream, "I will find him!" You know, like, he did it like 6 times in a row. You know, I mean, I just think that if you cut all that out, it would make it a little bit tighter movie. You'd lose 15 minutes. A 2-hour movie is pretty average and reasonable these days for a superhero movie.
So what do you do with Zod?
I mean, I don't... The same thing. You didn't need to show Krypton in the old movie, right? I mean, I think that there's other ways of doing that character without having to show his history with Jor-El and all that stuff.
And getting rid of that solves one of my problems with the movie that's tangential to it. And which that's is the Codex.
Yeah.
I don't
the
like...
The MacGuffin?
Yeah, it's so unnecessary and so overcomplicated and doesn't exist in any other Superman lore that I'm aware of.
Okay, so if we cut out Krypton the first 20 minutes, we do not see Jor-El die. But
you know he's dead, right?
But Jor-El like they can, show can that. Still show up on the ship and give the exposition.
My son.
That's another part I had. The weird, like, Jor-El vision existence that has no, like, there's no explanation for it. He's basically a sentient
hologram
that can respond. He's literally seeing his son.
He can move stuff. He can move stuff. And...
He can talk to, he knows who Lois Lane is. Right? Like, he might as well actually exist. But his wife couldn't. Only him. I think that the robot that he encounters in the beginning that injures Lois, they could have had something with that played a pre-recorded message or something like that. I didn't think, like, sentient hologram thing
added anything. I'm okay with it not being a sentient hologram. I do think that we need to see Jor-El and have him talk to
he
Cal.
He could have a pre-recorded thing. I'm just like, well, how is he able to actually see his son now?
I hated that it was interaction. Yeah, that, like, he could actually physically touch things and affect things.
See, like, I'm used to that in sci-fi, so it didn't bother me.
It's just weird.
I mean, if that was part of the technology,
they didn't explain it. And there's no history.
That's the whole thing. Like, why can he see his son now that's 30 years later?
Because it's not him. But
it is him. Because he has all the knowledge of Jor-El.
It's his consciousness. Yeah, I mean, there's a throwaway line in there. I guess there's other sci-fi like Star Trek that has that. So it's not hard for me to just accept that that's what it is.
But this isn't Star Trek. This is supposed to be a grounded, you know, thing.
Well, the Kryptonians are not a grounded civilization. The dude is flying like a four-winged dragon creature.
Which is completely unnecessary, but cool. Yeah.
So, I mean, let's not pretend it's grounded. And then the little capsule penises that fly into space.
I had that on my list! Fix makes the dick-shaped Krypton ships.
You know, you've got the Phantom Zone. Like, none of that is grounded in any, like...
No, but the actual Superman story is. So having this weird, unexplained, sentient hologram...
The hologram seems like the least sophisticated piece of technology that they have on Krypton.
I just feel like they could have just had a recording. Like, have a recording. Okay, sure, so if it interacts with things, that's fine. Whatever, it can interact.
I mean, even
with
on Supergirl, she can interact with her mother's hologram.
Right, which I don't think is good on that show either. I think the whole thing.
Interactive holograms are not new to sci-fi, so it's been accepted in the genre.
Is it Superman is a sci-fi movie?
Superman comes from an alien planet with alien technology and spaceships. That's science fiction.
That part is science fiction, but I don't think so.
So his entire background and the character is science fiction. He is an alien.
But we wouldn't see that all happen, which would make this more or less of a sci-fi movie.
So we have to have some compromise here.
So it's a pre-recorded message of Russell Crowe as
Jor-El.
Sure,
then you get Jor-El.
Yeah,
and
I think you
fine.
Still need that.
I agree that you need that. I mean, yeah. In Smallville, you had him interact with his father, you know, in pre-recorded messages.
Yeah,
and
I don't even remember that.
Where do we draw the line on limitations?
It can answer basic questions. Like,
sure,
really.
Like, it has a database. Like, I'm fine with it having a database, okay. Right? Where,
like,
where
you know,
can go,
it knows where he came from.
What's my family? Yeah. Who is my family? What was my name? You know.
Why did you send me here?
Where? What happened to my planet?
Yeah. Very simple stuff.
Does he explain Zod?
Sure. I don't think.
No.
I mean, it's a family of Krypton, an important family that was also related, like.
I don't think it makes sense to explain who he is, though, because if we leave off everything that happens in Krypton. All we're going to know is that he was a prisoner at some point. And for his dad to call that out seems unnecessary because his dad's hologram should never think that he's going
to
get out.
I don't even know that it needs to explain that he's a bad guy. I think that it just needs to, you could get some background on him.
What if they have a database of the prisoners and he's able to...
But he was only just like sent to prison right before it.
What
like,
if,
that would be a weird...
What if the pre-recorded message of Jor-El... also gets to do the super exposition thing and show like an animated history of what happened on Krypton, and he mentions Zod as Zod's military tried to take over, but it was too late.
But isn't that like didn't they already have the codex pulled before that in the movie? Like before, I feel like that happened like really literally right as.
But we're not seeing any of that. So if we're rewriting the movie, none of that happened that way, right?
Yeah.
So all we have to say is there was a coup. Zod tried to take things over because he saw the same fate that I did, but we took a different route.
Just have the hologram be the exposition bot.
It takes 2 minutes, right? And you tie it into Zod and Jor-El both understood the same fate, but came at it in two different directions, and that's why they became enemies.
And maybe then you can also explain why the perfect Superman suit has been sitting here for hundreds of years. In the ship. Thousands of years in the ship.
They said
that perfectly fits Superman.
1,000 years because Krypton had outposts.
I don't want it to be a ship. That was another piece.
I don't want
to
it to be 18,000 years. I think that's pretty awful.
No, it shouldn't be there at all.
Yeah.
I think that he uses the ship that he landed in, the data, the computer in that ship, right? That database, and he builds his own Fortress of Solitude.
Well, in Smallville, there was like a piece of the ship. That he went and did something with it, wherever his Fortress of Solitude is, and then that, like, automatically built, like, out of crystals. Crystals came, and, you know, formed. And something like that would have been fine. I feel like having
no
a ship was weird.
Giant-ass ship.
No ship. Now, you need to get Lois Lane involved somehow, and maybe you do that as the...
That was actually another point of mine. Like, okay. I completely cut the Lois Lane romance out. I thought that was another plot point that was too much for this movie. They have too much to do as far as building Superman into the hero that we know in this movie, right? There's a lot of problems with the tone that you've mentioned and things like that. But I think that Lois Lane can be in the movie. I don't think that she has to be in the movie. I don't think that's necessary at all. I think that if she, like, decided to start investigating Superman once he starts helping in Metropolis or whatever, that makes more sense rather than this random guy that healed her on her ship.
Yeah. I mean, you could introduce her and Perry and all that when Zod shows up, right, and starts wreaking havoc. then you can cut to, like, the news organization right. that's going to cover the story. And, you know, maybe the two of them don't even necessarily meet until the end of the film.
Or not at all, yeah.
What do you think, Ray?
Okay, so just a different point of view. In every single movie prior to this, every single superhero movie, Superman movie, Lois Lane has been portrayed as an idiot. And in the first, you know, 30 minutes of Lois Lane being on screen, she knows exactly who Superman is. She knows where he lives. She knows, like, his family and all the people he's ever come in contact with because she's a damn good reporter. This is the first time Lois Lane has been the character from the comics and not a dumbass.
Sure, but do we need that in the first Superman movie? So why can't she do that in the second Superman movie?
Superman is from Action Comics number one, but so is Lois Lane. So is Perry, so is Jimmy Olsen. Like,
but a comic book is a different medium. Like, I think...
All right, what if we spin this differently? What... Part of my problem with Man of Steel is this whole he's always in hiding thing and the way his dad sacrifices himself sort of unnecessarily.
Oh, Kevin Costner was a complete ass.
What if we don't do that? And what if the movie starts with Clark working at the Daily Planet?
I don't know. I like to get the newer, like, Zack Snyder's take on how Superman came to be. Like, that was some of my favorite parts of Smallville was, like, well, basically all of Smallville, because he wasn't Superman until the last episode or two, but him, you know, learning his powers and things like that. That's the interesting stuff to me.
But
I guess you could do that through flashbacks.
Yeah, whatever, which is with the kid stuff, right? We don't, like, as an adult, we just see him on the run all the time. And that's him being on the run and doing those nice things is what ties Lois into figuring out who he is. So I feel like you can't have one and not the other. So if you want one, you get both, or you get neither.
Yeah, I mean, if they handled flashbacks in a similar way to what they did in this movie, where you got to see him, like, in the closet covering his ears, and
yeah,
you got,
I really
to, you know, these
that.
Things.
And I like the school bus scene a lot.
Yeah, then I would be okay with that, I suppose.
So what if he's working at the Daily Planet, and he and Lois are on, like, they're doing some investigative stuff, and it brings up certain memories, and that's how you get the flashbacks?
I mean, that sounds very Arrow-y, but I'm good with that because I liked it in Arrow.
The flashbacks don't have to be prompted. In this one, they weren't really prompted. They came and went.
They were a little prompted.
But not like that.
Okay. I'm just trying to find a balance, you know?
Yeah.
So what do you want?
I like Lois Lane. I want her to stay. I don't think it's necessary
her too,
for her to be the romance.
Movie.
Okay.
Like, she doesn't have to get hurt on the ship. She does not have to, you know, make out with him at the end. She does not have to be on Zod's ship. That was dumb as hell. But I liked her, like, the idea that he was only going to talk to her once he's in police custody. And their exchange back and forth was interesting. The fact that she's, you know, flat out saying, you let them handcuff you. And
that's why I kind of feel like it needs to be, Clark is already at the Daily Planet, and that's why he trusts her.
I mean, that would solve another problem with the movie, which is this guy that has never done any news reporting before can get hired at one of the most prestigious news outlets in the world. Just at the end of the movie, he just has a job there.
So if he's already there, you know, you can assume he went to college or whatever and worked his way. And he's still not number one because he's
always a bad reporter.
Right. She's leading this investigation, right? He's there to assist for whatever, because, you know, they don't send people alone. Like, sending her alone to the Arctic seemed like something they wouldn't normally do.
But it does seem like something she would insist on.
Maybe. But, you know, we don't have to do it that way. We could have Clark be, like, the tag-along guy, right? And that's why you learn that he trusts her, right? So that way he does talk to her. I think you eliminate all of the stuff on Zod's ship because Zod doesn't want to capture Clark. Zod wants to kill Clark in our version of the movie because the Codex doesn't exist. So there's no reason to capture Clark or try and turn Clark. He doesn't care. Right? It's old Zod. It's the original Superman Zod who just wants to kill Superman and rule Earth.
Okay, so while we're on, like, villains, one of my points was Morphiora because
yes.
I thought she was... Like, when she was moving really quick between the people,
yeah.
that was scary, man.
It was
like,
well
that
done.
Was, yeah, and it was cool. And she, like, her, the actress, I don't even know who that is, but she looked badass in that suit, yeah. And I wanted to see more of her, like, the little goon squad they had. I feel like there should have been more with that scouting party, you know, before Zod comes down, and they should have, like, really, kind of like with Infinity War, where, you know, they have the hype man that's like, yeah. You're all blessed because he's coming to kill, you know, give Zod the hype men to come down, or yeah. Hype women in this case. To like really,
well, I think it just needs to be the two of them. Even
that would even be okay too. Although the big dude was kind of,
I mean, and I
wasted, but
that's the thing, right? Like he's kind of a take on from the original movie.
We don't
have
to waste him.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
So here, like, how do we amp up his role? Do we give him speaking lines?
I'm gonna bring it back to Infinity War. Like they had multiple villains in Infinity War. They had the big bad Thanos, right? That's our Zod. And then they had the big, what was the big dude's name in Infinity War? It was like, I don't even remember.
Here's my problem, though.
I remember Corvus Glaive and Proxima Midnight. And right. Those are the two that yeah. Show up and fight.
Proxima Midnight might as well be Feyora, right?
But is the big guy in Man of Steel, is he stronger than Clark, than Cal? Just because he's physically bigger?
I mean, he has more training.
But he's this giant.
Oh, the big guy.
Right?
Sure.
So, yeah.
I mean, you have to give him some reason to be there.
But that's the problem, though, because it needs to end up as Cal versus Zod.
Right.
And why would it be Cal versus Zod if this big dude
can
kick all
their
asses?
We can still have the military intervene, and the military can put down Feyora and the big guy.
Can they?
I mean, they did in this.
Give Superman the advantage over him. If he's big, he's stupid, right? Isn't that the way things work?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what he is.
So Superman will outsmart him. And then Feyora, you know, is maybe not as strong, but she's more cunning. And
or maybe she escapes.
Yeah, sure. Then we use her for Man of Steel, too.
Well, that's fine. I don't mind if she escapes. But Clark beats them both by messing up their headgear stuff. Because they can't breathe the air on the earth. Whatever, the atmosphere.
Because they're not used to it yet.
Right. It took him his whole lifetime, but then Zod's okay within 3 minutes. But
unacceptable.
That's my problem.
He's like, oh, it's X-ray vision. Oh, I'm good.
It's used so inconsistently in the movie. Yeah. That's the real problem.
Also, the atmosphere being what powers him is the sun. Come on.
Yeah.
It's this yellow always, sun.
It's even said in the movie. Yeah. They even admit that it's the sun.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the atmosphere.
But they made it a point to say it was the atmosphere, too.
When he goes up on the ship, which we're not going to have.
That's true. problem handled.
Problem solved, right? See, we all like this movie, but there are some clunky aspects.
Sure. I mean, you could do this to any movie, really, though. I mean, there's always things you can fix about
movies. We're going to if this is successful.
okay. So, I think what we need to kind of figure out is the appearance of Zod.
Right? I was fine with the way he looked.
No. I'm sorry. Not how he looks, how he shows up.
Oh.
Like, his introduction.
Well, at this point, he would start by showing up on our television screens in that nightmare mask for some effing reason.
Yeah, that was weird. I mean, right? I would just have him, like, be up in the ship controlling the terraformers or whatever. And then when the two goon squad or however many goon squad people you have are down there getting their asses kicked, then he's like, I'll do it myself. And he puts on the Infinity Gauntlet and comes down. And
clearly, that's the best option here.
I'm not trying to turn DC movies into Marvel movies, but they've done some things well.
Do we need any explanation about where they've been or why they're here?
We already got that. We got the exposition.
It's all in that.
He can explain. Zod is a megalomaniac who loves to hear himself talk.
Yeah,
he can give exposition.
Come on.
You caught me monologuing.
That's what he can do.
Okay.
I mean, he did that in this one, original cut, multiple times. He gave exposition about how they were in the Phantom Zone. He can do it again. Like, we can keep that.
That's fair. I'm good with that.
What do the chambers look like if they're not dicks?
But we don't see them at all.
Oh, okay.
We wrote out that whole part of the movie.
I say make them look like vaginas. And then they shoot the people out of the vagina.
Goodness.
Or boobs. But a pair. Austin Powers. A pair for some reason every time. Yeah.
All right. So Zod shows up. Superman's beating up the minion, so to speak. You know, he's doing a good job there. And Zod's like, all right, screw this. I'm going to have to get involved. So he comes down. Do we want to throw out the whole atmospheric thing and just assume that
they're equally powered.
They're all just equally powered at this point.
I like the idea that they struggle because the three against one can be overpowering. So if they're struggling, getting used to everything, especially if we're keeping the childhood memories of Cal struggling.
We'll show him instead of like going, oh, I'm good.
Yeah.
You know, have him be like, and not realize how powerful he is when he comes down. Like when he punches Superman, he flies into a building and he's like, okay, you know, because on his planet, he wasn't that strong, right?
But the problem is, how much do you want them to struggle? Because at some point, you know, it's going to have to be Zod and Supes. And if they're all equally powered, how is he going to fight off three of them?
Well, he's not. He's going to beat the two.
When they're still disoriented?
He's going to be better at one thing than they are. You know, he's going to be smarter than one.
But the thing is, he shouldn't be.
But he is, because the big guy's always going to be the dumb one, and then the woman's always going to be the more cunning, and he's going to be stronger than her, whatever,
you
know.
But the thing is, though, this is
we already talked about she's going to get away, and we're going to use her again.
And that's fine, right? But he has to think he's won, right? And he's never been Superman before, right? He doesn't really know how to fight. That's one of his problems. That's why Zod does so well, because he doesn't know. He's not a trained fighter. He's just super strong.
Like, you can have them struggle throughout the entire fight without it being like beating up some weakling. Like, you can have them lose their footing one or two times or trip. It can be small things here and there because they're still getting used to it. But, you know, they're also adults and not children getting used to it. They're able to do this a little bit faster, and it doesn't affect him like it did Cal.
That reminds me of, like, when in Batman v Superman in the warehouse scene when Batman's fighting, how, like, he gets shot, or the knife, you know, hits the back of his Cal, because he's slower, and, you know, he's not the same original Batman he was, you know, 20 years ago, and that was a way of giving him character development without actually, like, showing things, and so you could do something similar. That's what you just said kind of reminds me of.
Can we bring back the ice breath?
I don't think it's necessary. I mean, if it serves some plot element, then sure.
I have a fun moment.
Can we bring back the kiss that makes everybody's memory go away?
So what I'd like to do is when he's fighting them off, when he's fighting the big guy, what if he knocks the big guy into like a lake and he freezes the lake
in
there?
I'm good with it.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
I think that could look really cool.
As long as at some point in his flashbacks, he's shown that he's figured out he has the ice breath, you know, because you can't just surprise that on people.
I mean, can't you?
No.
He's had the power for decades.
No, yeah, but not everybody knows. That's a more obscure Superman power.
So he had, like, I don't know. See, but that's the thing, though. Like, we have to see him as a kid get the power for us to believe that he has it.
Or at least
we didn't see him do that with the eyes. He could have been a teenager or an adult. Like, when he figures it out.
No, he did it when he was a little kid. He heats up the doorknob and the teacher burns her hands.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
That wasn't a big, like, reveal. Oh, look, he has heat eyes. You know, that was just a little thing
that
he did.
That could have been a cuter moment where, like, he does it while taking a drink and all of a sudden, like, ice hits his face instead of water.
There you go.
That'd
be perfect.
Like, just something smaller like that. All right, so
that's fine.
It throws it in there as a childhood memory.
I know.
That it's not
just
a random.
So what childhood memory is going to be the cellophane S that he rips off?
We're not
going to
do that.
I think we should consider adding that in.
Or the magical rebuilding of the Great Wall of China just by looking at it.
That's definitely a plot point.
All right, fine. So he freezes the big guy in a lake because of the flashback where he makes his own Italian ice, and and he's fighting. I'm sorry, what's her name?
Feora.
He's fighting Feora. And
I feel like we need to give the big guy a name.
I can't remember. I can't remember.
I can't continue by just calling him big guy. All right.
I don't remember his name.
Thanos.
Big guy number 12.
Yeah, exactly. Generic big fighting guy.
We call him Gronk.
Gronk?
Yeah, like the football player who's really dumb.
Oh, Gronkowski?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, fine. He's Gronk.
I was going to call him Korg, but...
No, it's an insult to Korg.
I love
That's
Korg.
True.
Korg's He's
great.
More than Doug's friend.
That's true.
All right, so Feora, how do we want her to be, quote, defeated but get away? How does that happen?
So the military, that Chris Maloney's character blows himself up. We can show her surviving that instead of dying. And she just kind of walks away from it. She's just done with it. She's too injured. She can't go on anymore. We see her, like, walk off in the dust. Plenty of movies do that.
Okay.
No okay. body, no...
Or maybe she's not... We have some, like, stuff happen before that that makes her unsure of Zod's mission and not just, like, this mindless drone. And then having dealt with Superman, she realizes that maybe that this is not the right mission and she goes off on her own and does okay. something else. You know, I don't know. It doesn't have to be a traditional, okay. like, defeat
One of my scenario. My largest issues is the amount of destruction. We've talked about this multiple mm-hmm. times. I think for BVS to be set up, if we stick with the same plot point, Metropolis still has to have a lot of destruction. So I'm going to just go with that. But I'd like to keep the Smallville fights on the farms and mostly the fields and not really screw up the IHOP and the 7-Eleven and the Sears. Well, that was just marketing, but yeah. It was. So it,
so like, it's IHOB?
Yeah.
Stop.
Please say it.
It wasn't in the movie.
I'm going to listen to this episode in like he 5 years and be like, with a manager.
And the next one, the Codex is going to be buried under a Krispy Kreme.
Krispy
Kreme. Yeah, it's delicious. Let me get one right now while I'm waiting for place. The heroes. Yeah.
I love you, Elizabeth Banks. Anyway.
We're sorry.
Okay, so we keep most of that type of fighting stuff. I think that that's fine.
I mean, how about the goons are fighting in Smallville and then Zod takes it to Metropolis? Because then you have your destruction in Metropolis.
Mm-hmm. And then the Terraformer is going right through Metropolis too, right? So we have that.
Well, obviously Superman is going to go after the Terraformer and it's in Metropolis.
But he's going to the other side of the world, right?
Yeah, he does. He goes to the one that's in the Pacific.
Why don't they just have, we just have one Terraformer.
I like that.
Instead of just, like, it's Kryptonian technology. They have sentient holograms that can do anything.
I do like how the Terraformer is easier for you to wrap your head around than the interactive hologram. I just want to throw that out there.
It's not just an interactive hologram. It's a hologram that literally is someone's whole, yeah, everything about a person, their memories, and they're currently understanding everything as person.
I'm just saying, as a civilization, we're closer to that technology than terraforming technology.
Smashing a bunch of rocks into another kind of rock is not anything that is super hard for me to believe. So
that's not what terraforming is.
Basically, that's what it is. Okay. So.
Wait, we have a problem. Okay. We can't do terraforming.
Why?
Because we got rid of the whole atmospheric differences thing. What would they be terraforming?
They want to turn it into Krypton.
But we just said that there's no difference. See, the idea of
No. We said that there's no atmosphere difference.
That's what terraforming does.
But they still get their powers from the sun and everything. This would be having them go back to normal. Maybe Zod hates the powers. Maybe he just wants to be a normal person. So this would terraform the Earth so that the yellow sun doesn't affect
it. I think
them.
That would be a bit of a stretch.
That's just what the Matrix did. Block out the sun?
No, I didn't say block out the sun.
But the sun is what gives them their powers.
Oh my god, you were not listening to me at all.
I swear I was listening.
You weren't. If you change the Earth, it can still have Krypton effects. You don't have to get rid of the sun.
Why don't we just get rid of the terraforming and Zod just wants to beat the crap out of Superman?
Then we don't have our destruction.
They still beat each other up quite a bit in Metropolis without it being the terraformer.
Like, there are two problems for you here. Sun, Earth... Atmosphere.
Rachel, for those of you who aren't watching, Rachel got crayons out.
And the atmosphere is not...
You don't want the atmosphere. We've gotten rid of that.
Uh-huh.
So this is the problem. We keep the sun. Uh-huh. We change the Earth.
How does changing the Earth stop the sun from giving
powers? Is Mars different from Earth? Because it's a completely different planet.
But if Superman went to Mars, he would still get radiation from the sun.
You are not understanding
No,
me.
Clearly not.
Oh my god.
I'm not going to help, so don't look at me.
The Earth doesn't need an atmosphere to have other properties that could affect them and return them to normal beings and not these, like, super gods.
So you want them to put something in the atmosphere that would block...
Oh my god, I'm done with the atmosphere. We're not talking about the atmosphere.
So what's changing? Just the soil?
Earth.
The soil
this
is changing?
A terrible everything idea. About it.
So the ground that
you
they're walking
horrible.
On... No, wait, so the ground that they're walking on changes and somehow that...
Doesn't... You know, the ground we walk on now affect us?
Yeah, but it doesn't stop the radiation from the sun. Oh my god. That's where their powers come from.
I'm saying.
Then I'm missing it. Yes.
You understand where I'm getting at.
I'm not getting into this.
Like, that's why you're here.
This is good. This is good.
Let's move on. So we're done.
Our viewer count went up by double while you guys were arguing. So,
but do we keep the terraformer then?
I don't think it's super necessary, to be honest with you.
Okay.
But I think that they can just beat the crap out of each other enough to destroy. I mean, they did basically in the movie.
They destroyed most of Metropolis on their own.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with that.
Yeah, they can just use their heat vision a few more times to cut some buildings in half.
Exactly. Now, here's the big question as we're past the hour mark here. Does Superman snap Zod's neck?
Hells to the yes.
Oh, I don't want him to. I hate him. Okay, so much.
Some of the stuff I didn't cover, I'm not going to get deep into it, but there was going to be way more of a focus on, like, making Superman into the Boy Scout. Focusing on, like, how good he is, his goodness. He's going to be happy, he's going to be smiling, all these things that make Superman Superman, right? He's not Batman, he doesn't brood, he doesn't do these things. So when you see him snap Zod's neck, you know, like, in this movie it was questioning, could he have done something else, you know that had to be, in his mind, the only way out, right?
What if, like, we also added in some good childhood scenes, like, maybe after saving all those kids, he gets a medal at school or something.
But then everybody knows he's Superman.
No, everybody knows he saved people. And everybody knew that already. They just refused to acknowledge it.
Right, that's true.
No, we don't know that anybody else...
We knew the one kid saw him push the bus out of the water. Yeah,
but we don't know that,
and the mom says that other children saw it, too.
All right.
People know that he did stuff. I'm just trying, like, feeding into the happy stuff.
Even after he snapped Zod's neck, like, if you just had a kid come up and say thank you and, like, hug him or something, because you know he's going to be, he was emotional in the movie the way it was written. You know, if you gave him something to acknowledge that other characters saw it as the only option that he had or something along those lines, I think that would have helped a lot. I think the main problem was that he just snapped the neck and went and made out with Lois in the middle of a bunch of destruction of the, you know, an entire city falling around him. If you take that part out and it's just him.
Well, that and the very next scene is him punching a satellite out of the sky, which I thought was really cool.
There's a very jarring change there. I think if you just went with something that was more gradual and you understood that he's a good guy and he's just doing his last option, which is what they were going for, I think.
Yeah.
But it didn't quite get there for a lot of people. And then you had a couple things to reinforce that was the right option. I think it's still good to go.
I would have liked if they would have shown him as Superman cleaning up Metropolis, like he's helping.
That would have been a great way to end it, right? Because you don't want to end it on him being emotional about the Zod thing and a kid coming up and hugging him and telling him it's okay. You want to end it on a higher note. Now, it's been a day or two, and he's been helping, like, pick up the city and trying to recover from the destruction.
I mean, you could take it a step farther and harken really back to the Boy Scout Superman and have him, you know, he's cleaning stuff and everything like that. And, like, you know, a kid, like, pulls on his cape or something, and, like, their cat's stuck in a tree, and Superman gets the cat down.
Sure.
You know?
I mean, the stuff with the kids, like, the beginning of Justice League, the whole mustache thing that everybody hates... that the what they were going for there, I thought was really good.
The YouTube video was adorable.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I mean, it was relevant to the times and things like that. I don't think it was executed 100%.
No, it wasn't.
Well, but
the execution was terrible, but the idea behind it, what was written, was good.
And that's a good way to establish Superman as a good character. He was smiling really weirdly to those kids, you know, but you got the idea that he was happy.
Yeah.
And, you know, an icon that kids could look up to, and I think that was great. And if you added something like that, yeah, sure. I think that's perfect.
Anything else you want to change about the movie?
Get rid of the sepia filter, please.
Yes.
And, like, give us the bright... I mean, the suit, even without sepia filter, is a really, like, striking blue. I say bright blue, but it's not bright blue like Christopher Reeve. It's a striking blue.
Yeah.
And I want to see
it's
that.
Bold.
And have the red, exactly, have the red stand out.
The color, it needs to be colorful. Superman is a colorful character.
And
Batman
the only time
not.
It was is when he was up against the sky as the background. And
in the scene when he's, like, learning to fly or whatever, that was gorgeous.
Yeah.
But they had gotten rid of that sepia filter. There wasn't a sepia filter really there, so that was a big thing.
I want to keep that scene. I don't want that to go.
No, that's definitely still there. I have an idea for a post-credit scene.
Oh, jeez.
This is important. This is what these movies do.
No, this is what Marvel movies do.
No. Movies have been doing this for decades.
Okay.
Literally decades. Ferris Bueller has a post credit.
Come on, Derek. Out with it.
Slow it down. I think that this would be a good opportunity to introduce an Easter egg to bring Supergirl into the DCEU later. You could have a shot in space where, like, you know, a little portal opens up and another ship comes through that's got the Superman S on it and everything like that. And, you know, the camera pans and turns and you see Earth and you see the ship heading towards Earth, and then that's all you get.
You could also have him just talk to his robot, and maybe he's like, are there any other Kryptonians that survived?
I don't really think we need Supergirl in this. The problem is they both have... It's the same problem with the TV show, I think, is where you have two characters. It works in comic books, but when they have the exact same powers, basically, except one is maybe faster than the other and one's stronger than the other, you know, I just don't... Like, if you're going to establish the DCEU, we need to have characters that have very different power sets, right? And
I mean, I'm not saying...
Do a Flash Easter egg or a Green Lantern Easter egg or anything else... Or Wonder Woman, you know, because at this point they had Wonder Woman.
All right, that's fine. So if you want to do a Batman Easter egg, because that movie comes first, all right? If you want to do a Batman Easter egg, then do a Batman Easter egg. That's fine.
I mean, I think Supergirl's great, but well, I just don't
have the scene where Bruce Wayne is standing in Metropolis.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's fine. I just think it should be a very different character to Superman instead of being something that's. Okay. A very similar, except a female version.
So, I know we're going to be doing the rest of the DCEU. I know there's a lot we're going to change about Lex Luthor's story arc in BVS.
A little bit.
Maybe okay. There is, maybe there isn't.
What if we started that now, and Batman finds... He doesn't know what it's for yet, but he gets... a chunk of kryptonite from some like Zod ship or something like that. He's trying to take technology and he gets some of the kryptonite.
What if it's Lex?
Or okay.
What if we do Lex?
Fine, it's Lex.
I actually think it would be better if it was Lex, because then you have like, because Batman's always trying to find more kryptonite and buy more kryptonite. If it's Lex that has all the kryptonite, right?
But no one knows what it's for yet.
Sure, but he knows that this is an alien thing, and it's probably going to be valuable.
Maybe you just see
it's
the
Lex,
back of
a
bald
guy.
Man's head picking up a small piece of green rock in the distraction.
And then just calling for his company.
Sure,
go and get
fine.
This, or showing something like that.
Fine.
I love Batman, right? But
no,
I think
fine.
It's more suited to the character of Lex.
Fine.
apparently Derek's upset because we're just shooting him down
it's
and everything.
It's totally fine. Whatever you want. Yeah, it's fine. Anything else?
No, that's how our movie ends.
The bar scene with the bully.
Oh, yeah?
I just want to say that was a stupid... Like, I love that Superman got revenge, but it's like, this guy is just going to pick on...
Other women.
He's like, he doesn't look like me. He's like a hulking human being, but this guy's just like, I'm going to throw a beer can at this guy.
Yeah, Ray likes that scene. I hate that scene.
I liked it.
No, I like the revenge part of it. I thought what he did was...
I like
fun.
The idea of it, right? But it just doesn't make any sense. Like, if he was doing the Christopher Reeve thing where he's, like, hunched over and he's, like, more, you know, not, you know, walking like a hulking Superman.
Yeah. See, Henry Cavill's Clark isn't Christopher Reeve's Clark. And even Brandon Routh's Clark was more like Christopher Reeve's.
And I think he did a great job and they should have stuck with that. Because then it would have been believable that this guy thinks he can pick on this dude. But... He's walking like a normal dude with, you know, muscles everywhere popping out of
his shirt.
He
doesn't have to be an alien to punch you hard.
Right, exactly. Or, like, carry you out of the bar because you're not that big of a dude yourself.
That would have been hilarious if he just picks him up like a small child.
Right.
Well, that would have been... That would
sack
have been
of bananas.
That would have been too obvious.
Like, he works out, right? He looks like a huge dude.
If he snaps and punches a dude through a wall, then it's a moment of anger, right? But if he, like, picks him up and walks him out, people are going to be like, what the hell?
He doesn't have to, like, lift him off the ground, but he can, like, just drag him out or something. Yeah, I don't know. There's a way to do it, but...
I don't know.
I just thought that scene was ridiculous.
It's not a good scene.
No.
Okay. Well, I guess that's it, then. That is the end of our version of Man of Steel.
Okay.
And the Screen Heroes CU.
Which also has Ghostbusters with a giant Funko being the villain.
Yes, I love that.
Same universe.
Yeah, same universe. Batman fights him.
Yeah, that would be, I'd pay money to see that, actually.
All right, well, that is it then for us. Let us know what you think of our changes to Man of Steel. We will be back next week to do what? Is it The Incredibles?
It's The Incredibles. We're going to review Incredibles 2.
Fine time to see that.
It's The Incredibles. The Incredibles 2. Very excited to check that out. Seeing it Thursday night. So that's what we will be doing next week. Don't forget, you can join us live Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern at twitch.tv/heroespodcast, and you can chat with us. You can find Ryan at Buster Props.
Yep.
Ray at Siren Ray.
What?
I am at The Star Trek Dude. Thank you for joining us. We are the Heroes Podcast Network at Heroes Podcasts. That's plural. On Twitter, Facebook, and heroespodcasts.com. We'll catch you guys next week.